This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته.
الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله حي على الصلاة حي على الفلاح حي على الفلاح الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله
الحمد لله ثم الحمد لله الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستهديه ونستغفره ونستنصره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهدي الله فهو المهتد ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له إلها واحدا أحدا صمدا لم يتخذ صاحبة ولا ولدا ولم يكن له كفوا أحد وأشهد أن نبينا وعظيمنا محمدا عبد الله ورسوله وصفيه من خلقه وحبيبه اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين وبعد يقول جل جلاله في محكم التنزيل حتى إذا استيأس الرسل وظنوا أنهم قد كذبوا جاءهم نصرنا فنجي من نشاء ولا يرد بأسنا عن القوم المجرمين.
Hands down, this has been the most difficult week of my entire life. And this khutbah has been the most difficult khutbah to prepare for. Now, I don't usually need a lot of time to prepare for my content or my topics. But for the life of me, I've spent every single night trying to figure out what would I talk about when I get on the minbar, because it's obvious what the conversation of the hour is and what needs to be addressed for us as an ummah, but I just couldn't do it. And had it been any other incident or event anywhere else, it would have been much easier for me to populate the points and share with you the reflections, the observations, and the lessons learned. But this just hit way too close to home for me. It was way too personal as a topic. And when you build your life on something, on a maxim of some sort, on some idea or some incident that occurred, or some reality, and all of your secondary thoughts or your decisions were based on this one incident that was there, this one reality. When you rip that reality out of someone's life, it's very confusing. I've never felt in my life such a degree of confusion and a degree of loss. It's like an animal that was stuck in a cage for 50 years, then you open the cage and all it sees is sky, has no idea what to do, have no idea where to go, what to think, what the next steps are going to be. It's a milestone that for some reason, and that's something that I'm left with to contemplate myself, but for a reason that I am ashamed of, I had lost hope of ever changing. Something that I'd accepted as a reality to the day I die, that I was carrying with me this baggage that to Yawm al-Qiyamah, where I was going to argue my case, and I'm left, I don't know what to think anymore. You see, in 1970, the reality of the Syrian people changed in a way that they could have never imagined at the time. A reign of tyranny began, starting in 1970, it's been 54 years now, where the political scene within Syria changed significantly, radically. The country was pulled into the red camp. It turned into a communist country. The intelligence was trained by the KGB, and it practiced its authority and its ruthlessness upon the people of Syria. I returned to Syria in 1999. And the reality of the country was so out of this world. The reality of the country that the people accepted was so weird to me, so foreign to me as a kid, that I couldn't wrap my head around it. How is it that this is the reality? You cannot speak of something. You can't even mention it. If you do, you run the risk of disappearing. This is not ludicrous. It's not a fairy tale that exists in a book. This is the reality of a people that suffered for 54 years. And I'm not going to bore you with an aspect of the history of our country, what happened. You don't deserve to go through all that. But I do want to offer you a piece of contemplation at the end of it that may be of value to you and value to me and to the coming generations. But it was the reality of the time. I remember growing up and having opinions on stuff and being conditioned by family, by friends, by the school system, by anyone I ran into, that you stop talking about these things. I wasn't welcome in certain groups. Certain people were afraid of actually sending their young ones to learn from me because they, for the lack of another description, lisani tawil is what they used to say. He had a long tongue. He speaks, he says too much. So I was conditioned for years that I had to stop talking about things. And then 2010 happened. And then suddenly the Arabic Spring began, and Tunisia had a change within it, and then Libya did, and then Egypt did, and then Yemen. And all these countries started to see change, and the Syrian people had to talk about it. They talked about it, and they had never talked about this before. These discussions had never occurred. I started to watch and witness people that would never dare talk about politics in front of me. And I remember, like, the question that I would pose was, do I have the freedom to dislike him? I don't want to protest. I don't want to remove him. I just want the right to not like him. مَا بَحِبُّهُ أُرِيدُ الْحَقَّ أَلَّا أُحِبَّهُ بس. I just want the right not to like him. I don't like him. He's skinny and tall and goofy. I don't like him. I just want to not like him. I don't want him to go anywhere. Just stay where you are. I want the right not to like him. We didn't have the right not to like something or someone. That is beyond being deprived of a basic human right. That goes down to the detail of being deprived to think in a certain way. Don't even think it. Don't have an emotion. You have an emotion? Don't have an emotion. You're not allowed to have an emotion. This is the reality that people lived in. And they were complacent with it, and put a line under that word. They were complacent with it. And then 2011, parts of Homs and parts of Daraa finally dared to say something. And the ongoing bath of blood began. The river of blood began then. And what we knew was the ruthlessness of this regime became apparent to the rest of the world. Imagine rebels, the first thing that they do when they enter a country is not to go to the palaces, but to go to the jails, to open up jails, to set free the women and the children and the disabled and the people who have been there for 40 or 50 years. Imagine that this movement was just to be able to open jails, because the people who are in it have been in it for way too long, with no rights, being treated in ways that you will hear the stories. And you may hear a story and say, nah, that wouldn't happen. Yeah. You're going to hear a story and say, that's impossible. That's what you're going to say. This is that ruthlessness doesn't exist. Yeah, it did. You won't even hear the half of it, I swear to you. Well, the detention center that I was held in when it was opened, the person walked out. He was there when I was there 11 years ago. He was in there when I was in there. 11 years he's been sitting there. I've been living for 11 years. He's been sitting there for 11 years, being treated less than an animal would be, because at least an animal is deserving of some degree of compassion. But these people are being treated as if there are extra points for treating them inhumanely. How do you get over something like that? And I came here in 2013, and the cliche of what being Syrian meant hurt me, because we were either refugees with badly behaved children or people who made great shawarma. And my whole culture, the culture of what it meant to be a Syrian, was just reduced down to two things. People didn't mean it, but it happened anyway. Very offensive, very hard to accept. It became difficult for me to teach my children that wouldn't see, in my mind, they would never see the land of their forefathers. They would never understand the culture of it. They wouldn't know the beauty of Damascus and the place where their grandparents were born. To explain to them that you're Syrian, it was hard to say it, so I left it. There's nothing wrong with having some degree of national pride in your mind. It's when it turns into arrogance and racism that's a problem. But it became difficult to talk about it even in our own house, because we were reduced to something that did not represent us anymore. And it got forgotten over the years being here. I used to spend time with my Muhammad Al-Yazil Khair, and we would talk in Tim Hortons for hours in the first couple of years, and he would ask me, would you go back if it went? And I would tell him, if he goes away, I won't finish this conversation with you. If he leaves, I won't even finish the conversation. You can talk to someone else. I'm going to be on the plane. But then the hope of that completely was demolished. Year after year, it got forgotten. The problem was chronicized. People start to starve. Everyone. We saw a movement, a displacement of 7 million human beings. Hundreds of thousands of people are drowning in the sea as they attempt to make it to the shores of the Mediterranean, on the other side of the Mediterranean, trying to find life. My family is scattered over maybe 15 countries. The people who are back there can't make ends meet no matter what they do. It became just a sad reality. And then I think about today, and I think, how many other sad realities exist in our ummah? What about the people of Kashmir? What about the people of the Rohingya Muslims? What about the Uyghur Muslims? What about the people of Yemen and Egypt and Libya and Tunisia? What about the people of Somalia? What about the Muslims all across the globe that have been living the same depressing reality? And no one cares. And no one cares. And it's that feeling that when it dawns on you, it just makes it, you can't be happy anymore. My wife asked me after 2 years of being here, what happened to you? You're not the same person I married. I said, I don't know. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know what I lost, but I lost a piece of me was lost. It'll never come back. Even with him gone, it'll never come back. Something was taken away. An aspect of your existence can be stripped of you. When you're deprived of your basic rights, when you're removed from your country, you're taken away from your reality, when you're ripped out of the place that you considered home, and you're told it's not your home anymore, and you don't belong there, and it was never your home to begin with, and you walk this earth feeling like you don't belong anywhere. Many people in this room understand me. Palestinian people understand what I'm saying very well. They've been struggling with this for years. But this is the reality that we had to deal with. That's the reality of that country. The reflection points are many. I think the number one, the one that you have to think about, and you have no choice but to reflect upon, is that you can never be complacent with oppression. Do what you want in life. You will make many mistakes, and you will fail many times as a human being, but never be complacent with oppression, or with falsehood, or with batil, ever. That's what the Prophet ﷺ taught us. If you saw a munkar, change it with your hand. You can't, then speak out against it. You can't, then at least in your heart, don't be complacent with it. Don't be okay with it. Don't normalize it. Don't normalize it. Don't make it seem as if it's fine. It was never a problem to begin with. No. That piece has to stay inside of the moment a munkar, something that is wrong, something that is evil, something that is false, The moment it stops being false, it stops being wrong, then we're lost as a race, we're lost as a community, we're lost as an ummah. Don't be complacent with batil. Do what you may do, but not that, not that. That was the cardinal mistake of my people. For 30 years, they became complacent with the batil that was surrounding them, and they were okay with it. And the voice of someone who said, that's not right, was silenced. Was silenced, even by those who lost their lives because of it. We have a tendency as human beings to want to be with the strong, to make the strong seem good, so you don't have to actually go up against it, because that's too much of a headache, it's too much of a nightmare to do. No. We must continue as Muslims, to the day we die, to meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to continue to speak out against batil, and to refuse it, whatever it may be. Munkar has to stay munkar, and ma'roof has to stay ma'roof. And we cannot allow something that is munkar, something that is wrong, to later on become right in the eyes of people, in the eyes of our children. It has to stay wrong, and we have to do whatever we need to keep it that way. Or else the price that will be paid, look at what my people paid. I can't say anything. I can't act like I paid anything for this. Honestly, I have there's not one bone in me that allows me to think for a moment that I paid any price. Because no, when you look at the number of people, when you look at the young men, the number of them that lost their lives, the women that were raped, the houses that were burnt down, the children that were murdered, the full villages that were basically destroyed, that were gassed to death. I had a friend who one day woke up and no one he knew was alive anymore. He was with me in the hospital. He worked with me, he was a resident. He came from the village that was gassed, and he woke up one day and no one he knew was around. Everyone, he lost his mind. He literally lost his mind. He had to go into the hospital. He lost his mind. He couldn't think anymore. Everyone he knew, his whole reality was gone. That's what it's. There's a young man by the name of Mazen Hamada. Look him up today. Young guy from Deir ez-Zor. He spoke out in 2011 and he was taken in. He was put in the jail. And after a couple of years, he was let go and he made his way to the Netherlands, as many Syrians made their way out to Europe. And he spoke out against the regime for a while. And then the regime reached out to him and told him that, come back and we will make you the ambassador of the rights of refugees and the rights of people in jail. And we're going to change. We want to change things. And they negotiated with this poor gentleman for like 6 months. And finally, in 2020, he accepted the offer to come back and be the ambassador. He enters Syria, they take him to Sijun Saidnaya. They found him dead on the 8th of December of 2024. They found him dead, they found his body still there. His body was still there with severe marks of torture. This is the price that is paid when you're complacent with dhulm, when you accept batil, when you're okay with it. When you don't even have the ability to point it out and say, that's wrong. I can't change it, but it's wrong. And I'll never accept it, and it will always be wrong. Once you lose that, the price that is paid to right the wrong becomes a little bit too heavy. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه يغفر لكم يا فوز المستغفرين استغفر الله. الحمد لله وحده وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على من لا نبي بعده وعلى آله وصحبه ومن اتبع نهجه ووفى عهده. إخواني وأخواتي, زال هذا الظالم وزال طغيانه وزال زبانيته وانتهى للسوريين عصر لم يكونوا يحلمون بانتهائه. بذلوا في التخلص من هذا الرجل الغالي والنفيس, بذلوا أموالهم وبذلوا دماءهم وأبناءهم وأنفسهم. وأني أقف اليوم بعد هذا الأسبوع الذي مضى منذ زواله أتأمل في مراد الله سبحانه وتعالى وملكه وأقول, كيف زال هذا الظالم بهذه السرعة؟ أي كلمة كن قالها الله ليزول في 15 أيام؟ أي كلمة كن يقولها مالك الملك ليأخذ الملك منه في أيام لم نستطع فيها أن نستوعب ما حصل؟ أنا إلى الآن ما استوعبت الذي حصل, إلى الآن لم أستوعب ما قد حل في بلدي. إلا أن الله إذا أراد شيئا هيأ له أسبابه.
هيأ له أسبابه أسبابا تعرفها وأسبابا لا تعرفها ثم قال للظالم إذا إن الله لا يملي للظالم فإذا أخذه لم يفلته. أخذه الله سبحانه وتعالى أخذ عزيز مقتدر ليعلمنا سبحانه وتعالى مرة أخرى أنه إذا أراد شيئا قال له كن فيكون. يوم من أيام الله سبحانه وتعالى، لأن هناك من أساء الأدب معه، لأن هناك ثمة من أساء الأدب مع الله ففقد في ذاته ففقد الأمل في نفسه أن يرى يوما ينتقم فيه من الظالم، وأعد الأمر إلى يوم القيامة وجهز ليوم القيامة ما يجهز له المظلوم. ثم أزال الله سبحانه وتعالى الظالم بكلمة كن، فأوقف هذا الذي أساء الأدب معه في حالة من الحيرة، من الخجل الشديد، من الاستحياء من ربه. كيف تيأس من روحه؟ كيف تقنط من رحمته؟ إنه إذا أراد شيئا، إنما أمره إذا أراد شيئا أن يقول له كن فيكون. فأي إنسان بعد اليوم، أي مسلم بعد اليوم يجوز له أن ييأس من رحمة الله؟ أي مسلم بعد اليوم يقول والله لا يزول هذا النظام السيء، لا يزول هذا الكيان، لا تحرر فلسطين، لا يخرج المصريون، لا يحرر العراقيون، لا يجد أهل باكستان وأهل الهند وأهل الصين؟ كيف يقول مسلم بعد اليوم؟ لا يمكن، ويطول الأمل ويصعب. والله سبحانه وتعالى أرانا يوما من أيامه ونحن في غفلاتنا، والله ولا واحد منتبه ولا واحد متوقع هذا الأمر، إلا أن الله سبحانه وتعالى شاء فأزال الظلم. أنا كتبت كلمات من 2015 قلت فيها، ثم أزلتها وضعتها على الحائط الأزرق، ثم أزلتها خوفا على أهلي في البلد، انتقدوني قالوا هذا يخرب بيتنا، فشلتها خوفا عليهم. قلت حزني على الشام الجريحة ما لها أرضا وشعبا ماءها وجبالها، لم يبق لي منها سوى معزوفة في الحب تطربني لأنسى حالها، ما من جمال في العيون يمر بي إلا أرى في مقلتيه خيالها، أمم البلاد جميعها حسدت حضارتها ورامت مثلها وجمالها، يا ليت عمري لم يطل حتى أرى جثو العظيمة زلزلت زلزالها، من كان يحسب أنه سيصيبها هذا الذي لم يجتثث أمثالها، تبا لطاغية أحل دماءها عاث الفساد مقطعا أوصالها، أسفي على نفسي وليس شموخها نحن الذين نزول ليس زوالها، وطن بريح الياس ياسمين تركته فشممت في الياسمين حيالها، بعض الخلائق يسكنون بلادهم وأنا بقلب الشام ذا السكنى لها. ثم أضفت اليوم يوم من أيام الإله بشامنا، شعب يقوم ململما آمالها ومطببا للجرح جمعا شمله، رام العلا وبصبره قد نالها، بعيونه الأقصى وغزة قبلة وقيام أمة اكتفت أوحالها، إتيان فجر والشباب تأمه جيلا يرد جمالها وكمالها، يا رب تمم فرحة والطف بنا واجعل بداية فتحنا أقفالها. I hope that was a benefit to you. وَاعْلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ أَمَرَنَا بِأَمْرٍ عَظِيمٍ فَقَالَ إِنَّ اللَّهَ وَمَلَائِكَتَهُ يُصَلُّونَ عَلَى النَّبِيِّ يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا صَلُّوا عَلَيْهِ وَسَلِّمُوا تَسْلِيمًا. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم، وبارك على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما باركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد. وارض اللهم عن الأربعة الخلفاء السادة الحنفاء أبي بكر وعمر وعثمان وعلي، وارض اللهم عن أزواجه أمهات المؤمنين وعن آله الطيبين الطاهرين وعن صحابته الغر الميامين وعن التابعين ومن تبعهم بإحسان إلى يوم الدين وعنا معهم برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين. اللهم اغفر للمسلمين والمسلمات والمؤمنين والمؤمنات الأحياء منهم والأموات، اللهم فرج هموم المهمومين ونفس كروب المكروبين وارفع الغم عن المغمومين وارفع الظلم عن المظلومين واحقن دماءنا ودماءهم المسلمين. اللهم احقن دماء إخواننا المستضعفين في كل مكان، احقن دماءهم في فلسطين وفي لبنان وفي الشام وفي السودان وفي باكستان وفي غيرها من بلاد الأرض يا رب العالمين. رد الأمة أجمعين إليك ردا جميلا، اجعل هذا الفتح فتحا للمسلمين في كل مكان، اجعل عاقبته فلسطين والأقصى يا رب العالمين. رد المسجد الأقصى إلى رحاب المسلمين، ارزقنا أجمعين فيه صلاة قبل الممات. اللهم أخرج الصهاينة منه أذلة صاغرين بقوتك يا قوي ويا متين. اللهم بدل حال هذه الأمة إلى أحسن حال، اللهم بدل حال هذه الأمة إلى أحسن حال برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين. اللهم تب علينا من جميع ذنوبنا توبة نصوحة، طهرنا بها قلبا وجسدا وروحا، وما ذلك عليك اللهم بعزيز. ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. عباد الله، إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم.